My name is Barbara Lee. We're going to talk this morning about the seminary experience from a female perspective. How many of you have ever gone to seminary? Good, couple, wonderful. I want to just, this is going to have two different parts. The first part is a study that I did, and I'll tell you a little bit about that. And then the second part is that I will allow you to ask me, as a person who has been through seminary, anything you please. All the questions you wanted to know that no one ever answered. I'll begin on the formal study, though. During the late summer of 1982, I was asked to give a talk about what the seminary experience is like for women today to a church staff workers group. And I thought, simple assignment. And then I realized that it would be unfair and simply presumptuous of me to say what the seminary experience is like for women when I was only one person. And so I chose to study this essentially new phenomenon in a little bit more formal way. And my purpose today is to delineate, I guess, some of the issues that were in that larger study and to share just kind of the image of what women in general in this particular institution feel about the seminary experience. First of all, let me tell you about the people that were included in this study. There were 75 women who answered a relatively formal questionnaire. There were 15 from, and some of you may know this about seminaries, some may not. There are essentially four classes in a seminary. The first year you go in, you're called a junior. The second year, you're called a middler. The third year, you're called an intern because you go out into congregations. And the last year, you get that wonderful title, senior. Well, I took 15 students, female students, randomly from each of those classes, plus 15 women who were at the seminary to get a master's degree, a Master of Arts degree, which allows them, prepares them rather, to go out as maybe parish workers, maybe as youth workers, but not to be ordained. So there were people who were planning for ordination, women, and women who were not. For those of you who care anything at all about studies, this had a 90.7% response rate, which means that if there were 100 people participating in the study, almost 91 of them would have participated, which is a very healthy response rate. And it also included 33, or let's say a third, of all women in the seminary who were preparing for ordination, and almost 50% of the women preparing for regular master's degrees or what? Youth workers, parish workers, whatever. So that, getting all that out of the way, I can tell you a little bit more about what we explored. The first question that I asked was the reasons why women enter religious professions at this point in their lives. And first of all, there are many seminaries in Minneapolis, St. Paul area, and I chose to take people only from one. I will not name the seminary because of some seminary-specific information, but let me suffice it to say that the women here felt truly that they were responding to God's call. Secondly, many of them had decided to enter the seminary years and years ago, but for some reason had just simply never gotten there. Some women said they weren't permitted to enter to become clergy when they finished college. Women just simply weren't permitted at that time. Others said they wanted their husbands to get their education first. Sometimes other women said, they wanted to get their children in school, and then they'd all be in school together. So that was kind of interesting. Thirdly, women indicated that coming to seminary was just a natural progression in their lives. They felt they had grown to the point where they wanted to do something, and this is what they had chosen to do. It was a way to faithfully live out who they were. Now that's what the people preparing for ordained ministry were saying. The master's students who were preparing for parish work, youth work, these kinds of things, said something different. They simply said they wanted more education. So there was a real difference between the two goals. The second issue we talked about is ways in which age and sex help or hinder women in achieving vocational goals within the institutional church. It was interesting to me, women felt that they had special gifts to offer to the church. And whether or not personality characteristics are inherently unique to women, characteristics such as nurturing and loving, sensitivity, openness, whatever, many believed their gifts were a part of their traditional roles. In a more negative sense, there seemed to be three areas where women felt their femaleness would hinder them. First, in regard to restrictions. Women believed that they wouldn't have the opportunity for call that men would have. They wouldn't have the opportunity for placement in churches. They thought they would also have trouble in getting second calls, moving from one place to another, where men may not have as much difficulty. Secondly, in regard to hierarchy and politics, the comment that gave me kind of a kick was, they said women never played football. Women never learned the rules of the game. And I don't think that's so far from true. They talked about the male structure within the church. And third, they talked about sexism and prejudice. And women felt that both from lay people in the church as well as from clergy. The master's students, however, the people who were preparing for parish work and lay ministries, didn't have any feelings about this at all. They felt perfectly equal. In fact, they felt that they would have more opportunities than the ordained women within the church, which is kind of interesting. In regard to age, out of these 75 women, 42 were in their 20s, and all but two felt they were much too young for seminary, which kind of fascinated me. I didn't expect that response. They felt too naive and too idealistic. They often just said, I feel too young to be here. But they were there. Of the 17 women in their 30s, the basic response was that they finally felt more secure and confident. And they felt they were finally old enough to be taken seriously. Of the 9 women in their 40s and 50s, they felt more perceptive and wise. I think the comment that delighted me most, because I could relate to it, was this. I tend now to pick the battles I'm willing to fight and finally realize that some issues simply aren't worth getting cranked up about. And I think perhaps that's true. The third issue we talked about were the ways in which women perceived their eventual roles, responsibilities, and opportunities within the church to be the same as or different from their male counterparts. On the positive side, women made the following kind of comments, and I'm talking about women who plan to be ordained. They said more women would be assigned to multi-staff ministries. Others felt that the differences in the kind of roles and opportunities they would have would relate only to their strengths and to their interests. And a third area, they thought women had opportunities because of their femaleness. Those were the only three positive ones. Now we come to the negative ones. And these were by far the most abundant responses. They thought it took too much time and would take so much more time for women to gain credibility in parishes. One woman said, "I doubt women's opportunities are even similar to a male's within the church." Another said, "Until bishops and congregations are more open, biases will exist and limit." Another said, "Women must be very much aware they may be closing themselves off to dating and marriage by entering ordained ministry, and that's very sad." From the MA perspective, the people who were, again, planning for lay ministry within the church, they accept and even visualize themselves in a lesser role, which is, personally, I think rather sad, because they are so incredibly important to our church and to what the church accomplishes. But there were three levelers. Women said, allowing ourselves to be vulnerable and accepting of human frailty, not feminine weakness, but just of our humanness, it's one way to show our strength, that we can deal with that. Others said that men and women should not compete to do God's work, that we are all here and should all be doing it together. And the third area was that men and women have qualitatively different ministries, but we should enhance each other, we should support each other in how we do things. The fourth issue was reactions to current theological education. And for those of you who are at Holden for the first time like I am, you see there are lots of issues that many of us probably have never thought about, ways in which our minds can be stretched. Believe me, here is one area where it happens, but in the seminary it happens in incredibly more areas. And you wonder if you can even grasp for all the things that are going on. It says, positive theological education makes people think for themselves. Women said they discovered personal growth and an expanding perspective within themselves that they had never, ever anticipated before. They couldn't believe the difference within themselves. I love the opportunity, said one, to learn what it means to be Christian, Lutheran, and a feminist. And to put them all together was, for her, incredibly important. Women were worried, however, about the traditional maleness of seminary education. Textbooks talk about males as clergy almost totally, about the structure and the hierarchy. They were concerned because, 99% of all seminary professors are male. The women's perspective is simply not there, and yet we're 50% of the population. Personal issues were related to current theological education also. and women felt that women could help improve theological education. Nearly 40% said that in no uncertain terms they felt that women should be part of seminary faculties. They felt that the female role model is important. People such as Susan up here, a female clergy person, or female clergy persons out in the parish, should get together with students to tell them what it's really like out in the world, out in the parish, to help them learn how they can best prepare themselves for work, whether it be in a rural parish, in an urban parish, or any other setting. The primary point was that female seminarians felt that female clergy of all denominations should network together to help themselves, to support each other in whatever way was feasible. Women also felt that it would be helpful to the church if there were a special focus in seminaries on women in ministry. And they felt not only would that be helpful for women, but also for men? Because there are unique situations that women deal with. We talked yesterday a little bit about the ministry of touch, and some women are concerned to reach out and hug their male parishioners. But why should that be any different than the male clergy reaching out to hug their female parishioners? But there are issues that for some reason just seem to be a little bit different. And finally, there was the importance of new perspectives in theological education in today's world. They talked about inclusive language and how traditionally, in most of our churches, and the church where I grew up, I know, God is still referred to with the male pronouns. That's certainly not wrong. But if you go back to the early Greek, there's no reason why, and that's where our Bibles have been translated from, the New Testament anyway, the word can mean either male or female. And so there is no reason why the word for God cannot also be translated in the female, with a female pronoun. And it's just to bring some more sensitivity within the seminary experience. It doesn't mean this has to go immediately out to congregations, but it does mean that people who are going to be clergy should be knowledgeable about some of these different understandings. There was also the very deep feeling that the church should address the social fabric, the social milieu, the society in which it finds itself, as well as strictly religious issues. How does the church deal with aging, with sexism, with social orientation, with weapon buildup, with the environment, with ethical or technical concerns? And there was a very strong feeling that the church should address some of these issues so people will know where the church stands and how to best meet the needs of people out in the world. I guess finally in this area, women saw that they would be treated differently for a number of years. That didn't mean better or worse. It just simply meant differently. And the fifth and the, I guess about the final issue that I'll comment from the study here, one of the prime reasons the study was done in the first place is because there were a number of women in their 40s, 50s, and 60s who wanted to return to seminary. And they were thinking, I'm too old. Who'd want me at this point in my life? And they wanted some recommendations from students who were already there about what they thought about other women returning to seminary. And this question by far elicited the most response from women. The most frequent thing they said was, take a look at your vocational goals. If this is really what you want to do, go for it. If this is where you feel you have skills, abilities, and interests, do it. If you have a dream, they say it, don't let anyone tell you you can't do it. And I thought that was really encouraging that women were supporting and affirming other women in this. Second, the most frequent response could probably best be categorized as advice giving. They said, follow your sense of call. Get to know your professors well. Be clear in your direction. Be patient, persistent, and lovingly assertive. And then I love this one. As you can tell, I kind of like these little diggy ones. It says, don't be discouraged, just conservatively paranoid. I like that. I guess pretty refreshingly to me, at least 25% of all the respondents included in their, quote, words of wisdom to other women, these three words, go for it. And 90% of the people who used the words "go for it" ended it in at least 3 exclamation points, which seemed to me a very strong push to women to follow their sense of call, to do what they think they are supposed to do within the church. The third most frequent response seemed to be about the challenging nature of the seminary experience. The seminary is incredibly difficult academically, and you have professors and other people who are questioning your motivation with good reason. And the final feeling, the bottom line, however, is that the struggle is worth it. They say theological education hits you at the core of who you are, and the seminary then simply is not the place to be if you have an axe to grind. It's a place to learn, to grow, to stretch, and to, quote, be and become. Basically, women affirmed each other, and I found this to be a very positive statement. Positive in the sense that women believe they have something to offer to the church and that they can do it well. And the seminary people who have read the results of this study say that's true, and we're glad to hear it. Now, as for me, that's the first part. Anybody have any questions on the first part? The formal stuff.
How old
You've
was
got a
the,
window right behind you.
No, I'll move. How old?
Sorry about that.
Well, maybe somebody in the front. Sorry, how old was the oldest woman in the seminary study?
The oldest woman in the seminary study was, I think she was 62. Yes.
A lot of men who are in the ministry are second or third generation ministers.
Yeah.
Did your study indicate how many of these women were daughters of ministers?
No, we didn't check on that at all.
Yes, I'm curious about marital status of your respondents.
That's not in there. If I recall correctly, it was about 45% married, 55% single. That's off the top of my head, but that's what I recall.
Is that
true? And most of them had families, several children.
They Is that percentage typical?
She can't see.
Is that percentage typical?
I don't know. All I know is that that's the percentage at this one particular large institution. Any other questions about that? Some of you may be interested in knowing what it's like to be a disabled student, female student, at a seminary. I can tell you that my experience has probably been very different from most, in that I utilized a sign language interpreter for all the classes that I attended, which means that I attended only about half the classes everybody else attended. At $15 an hour, and with the seminary kindly paying for the services of an interpreter, you do what you can independent study, as much as you can independent study. I never attended a precept, which is a small group, discussion group of seminary students. So my experience was different, but I also then got to know professors very well because I met with them one-to-one on a regular basis. So my experience in that respect has been very different. I also found the seminary very supportive of me, an older woman. I'm 44. This is the beginning of a fifth, depending upon how you look at it, a fourth or a fifth career. And I found that many, many women were in at least third career, which is kind of interesting. They weren't all young things coming directly out of school. The seminary experience was very positive. My classmates accepted me first as an older woman, very, very positively, even the young ones. And as we were talking about the ministry of touch, they would come to me for their hugs when they wouldn't dare go to women their own age. So I had all kinds of
hugging. Did you feel that there was any resentment by the other students for against a woman being in the seminary?
I think by some of the younger men, yes. Some of the younger men, these are just individuals. I can't tell you on a general basis. I can just tell you from my own experience.
And others accepted you?
Most, I would say, well, by far the majority had no problem with women in seminary. There were a few younger men, and they were primarily from rural areas, who felt that women should not be clergy. And the seminary did not feel that was the proper stance, and so somebody often talked to these people to share with them the belief of the church. And but nevertheless, I mean, you don't drop your biases.
No.
As soon as you hear something else, and there's no reason you should, you know. So we all had to learn, and we were all stretched in many, many ways. Yes?
I have a dear friend that's in seminary at Gettysburg.
Yes.
And she is in the ministry for the hearing impaired.
Uh-huh.
And do not all the seminaries have them?
All seminaries have, I'm sure, the very basic information, but many seminaries go about things a little differently. Mm-hmm. We do not have a special program at, I was at Luther Northwestern Seminary. Mm-hmm. There is no special program there for serving hearing impaired folks.
I thought she went there because that's what she wanted to do. She's a senior now. And
it's possible. I really don't know about that.
I think there's a specialty thing.
Yeah.
I wonder about the others.
Any other questions? I think that when you take a look at the class I began with, 40% of us were women in our class. I think the overall average at Luther Northwestern Seminary last year was 23% were women. And it seems to be leveling off at about that place. Many married couples, yeah.
What proportion then of women were ordained and accepted calls to the men that graduated?
I can't give you a specific number. I can tell you that last year there were, I'm afraid my numbers aren't correct, but it seems to me there were over 200 persons who were graduated from the seminary, and I think, I don't know the number of the men, primarily because I guess I didn't look it up, but I know there were probably about, I want to say 10 women who didn't automatically get calls, and they are waiting, and I know some of them have received calls since then. I'm unsure of my numbers here, and I hate to mention them, but off the top of my head, that's about what it was. How was it at your seminary, do you know? This is Anne Strand from Vancouver.
We have about half women.
Half women. What about Paul?
Well, you know? A lot of them are Anglican,
were they automatic, I mean, they
automatically are given a call.
Their calls are kind of built, it's a different system than our women, so I can't, it's really not fair to compare.
Yes.
Their bishops have to be placed.
Yes.
Once they've gone that far.
Okay, okay. Any other questions? Yes?
This doesn't have to do only with women, but I'm curious as to whether there's a screening process for anyone who wants to become a clergy person in any of the churches.
Yes. There is a long application. All I can speak for is the seminary that I know. There is a long application form. There are a lot of essay-type questions where you talk about your life, you talk about your faith, you talk about whatever problems might exist in your life or whatever crises you've been through. The three crises that have affected your life the most. Then there's always an entrance interview, and so you talk with whoever is assigned to talk with you. During the first, as you are assigned to the seminary, each one of us is assigned to an advisor with whom not only you figure out what classes to take when, but if you have difficulties, you are expected to return to that person to share. They likewise are expected to share with you if they hear of any difficulties regarding your progress. There is also a dean of students and a campus pastor who do the same thing, I understand. So you have ongoing contact. The beginning of the second year, you are matriculated, which means that if the seminary allows you to be matriculated, they are saying, we expect that you probably will finish your degree. When people are weeded out, that's usually the point of where it's done.
You also...
Pam?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I'm an LCA, and before... We also have to go through a professional leadership committee that also takes care, does a lot of that stuff before you even are first, and then they say, okay, we'll be with you through this. And then you go through all the seminary stuff. So.
Yes, I'm LCA, and that has to occur every single year.
Yeah, you still report to them continually throughout.
I missed what you said.
No, I said, what you said, every year. Continue.
Okay.
What's the dropout rate?
I don't know.
Did you find that there was a...
I need somebody to interpret what he's saying to me.
Did you find that there was a greater...
Somebody else.
Just come around.
Why don't you come around? She can read your...
Barbara, did you find that there were more women... leaving, do you sense that there are women were more were more prone to leaving, that they didn't feel that they could cut it than the men or not?
I don't think so. Most of the women who came to the seminary were women who had probably given it as much or more thought than the men because they have been excluded this period of time. Most of them are family people with children, responsibilities for children, and they had to give it probably a little more thought because they were supposedly expected to be the caretakers at home, and they had to make more effort to be there. My feeling, and again, I'm not sure, I mean, I don't know the statistics, but my sense is that there were not that many women who dropped out. And as compared to men, I don't know, but it seemed to me that the women were there.
Can I ask another question?
Sure.
Did you see I went through a lay ministry program in a seminary. Did you find the presence of women and that inclusiveness that fostered spilling over and helping in the MA program? Did you get a sense of that?
The MA program people seem to think that helped them a lot, to have women in the Master of Divinity program, the group preparing for ordination. They seem to feel it helped them a lot. But the MA people, the lay professional people, felt sort of like second-class citizens, which is very unfortunate.
That's why I didn't go there. I felt...
I'm talking about that as far as the study is concerned, not about the seminary.
And the particular seminary that I went to had very strong support for MA students, and also for the female students. And those two seem to me to tie together very, very well.
Yes.
Earlier this summer, there was someone here, maybe you remember, John, who talked about, who was from a seminary, I don't remember which one, but someone asked the caliber of people going to seminary, if it was different between men and women. And it was a higher caliber of women entering seminary, and the men seem to be rather mediocre these days. This was from a seminary. And I'm not sure why, except they said that very special women really feel the calling, whereas men are kind of money-oriented sometimes, and they make a lot more money on the outside. The high caliber can make a lot more money in the world. And that was kind of becoming an issue.
I have heard the same thing, that the women in... Now, this is what I have heard. This is... I can't tell you for sure because I don't know the facts. But what I have heard from a number of people on seminary faculties, not only at Luther Northwestern but at others, is that women test out much higher academically and have more academic expertise and skill than the males who are currently in the seminary. I can just say to you that if you look at the academic grades of males and females in the seminary, women come out on top. That's all I know.
And part of that may be that they feel they need to work harder.
Very true. Very true.
But they need to be better to be there in the first place.
That could very well be.
Because of the discrimination that still works.
That could very well be. Yeah.
Is it also because the women are entering at an older age, maybe, than some of the males?
I think we're finding that the men are also entering at a later age. A lot of second career men.
I see.
Yeah. Yes.
This is changing the subject completely, and I am not opposed to female pastors by any means, because I know there are some very good ones. But I'm wondering what effect it is having on the families if the husband has a good job in a town, and the wife then becomes a pastor, and there's no call there. She has to accept a call elsewhere. What is that doing to the family?
Okay. First of all, we are finding that in society in general, most families are two-career families, at least in the urban areas, because they can't afford to live otherwise. As far as clergy, there are some clergy couples. That's not what you asked, but that's part of my answer to you. There are some clergy couples who will go out, for instance, to a rural area, to a 2 or 3 point parish, and each work supposedly half time, which probably ends up to be 40 hours apiece a week. But they will share one call. Then there are the couples where the wife is the clergy person and the husband is in some other kind of a field. And from what I have learned from my classmates who have already gone out to parishes is that this is really no different from other two career couples. Because you have to make plans, you have to prepare for your family one way or another. There's a lot of shared parenting. It might be the husband who takes the children to the doctor when they're sick rather than the wife, or it might be the wife if she is available to do it at that time. But there are just a lot of shared responsibilities that in the past women have been expected to do, or men have been expected to do. Women are doing some of the male, whatever male things are, in the household and vice versa. Maybe some of you who are two career parents can speak to that. Anything else? Feel free. I don't know, did I answer your question?
Well, in a way, yes, I guess so. I guess I just, it still bothers me about if the woman, it seems to me, she's going to have to give up her career in many instances so that her husband, maybe he's promoted in his job, well, he can't afford not to take that job just because his wife is probably assistant pastor in a church or...
Well, we had some interesting things, though. We've had some women who have been called to different areas of the country, and the husband has given up his position to go along, and not because he feels he has to, but because together they made the choice that, you know, at this particular time and in this particular situation, this is the career that should be supported. For others, it's the other way around. But you're finding a lot more flexibility, not only with seminary persons, but with people having two careers as well. Yeah.
That is the case in my family. I have a cousin whose wife is studying to be a doctor. And that same thing just happened to them this summer. She has to go to intern. He quit his job to leave and move 5 states away because she has to do this now. But that was a known. That was a given when they were married.
Yeah.
She was choosing to be the doctor. He also had a career, but this was a known that they would do this. I happen to have a career that I travel extensively. It's a reverse traveling salesman. My husband is home. I'm the traveling person. My daughter thinks that's normal. I'm gone 4 days at a time in her life. People ask, how can you leave your child? This was a known in our life, and my daughter is very comfortable with that. And so it is flexibility, and it's change from what women have known many, many years.
Thanks for sharing that.
But even more than that, it's the shared commitment.
It is.
To
when
the marriage.
You enter the marriage.
That's right. It's even more than that, it's the shared commitment to marriage. Yeah. And that's, mm-hmm. that's the
yes. Well, the way I'm characterizing, I hear there an assumption that the husband makes more money than the wife. Therefore, he's the one that should be bound to.
Probably. I don't know.
And that's not necessarily true anymore. It might be that it's appropriate,
absolutely.
Even though they haven't talked about it, for him to give up his job because she makes more money.
Or for whatever else is
yeah.
important to them,
yeah,
whether
right.
it be money or location or whatever.
But I think there was a time when it was an automatic given that the husband made a lot more money. And that's still true to some degree, but not necessarily anymore.
That's right. Yes?
I think it's also an automatic given that money is what propels us. And I think that there's a new set of rules coming along now. And I think that the older generation, it's hard to perceive that we do not equate living on the same plateau or level that they grew up with.
That's true.
And that I think that it's a broadening. If we can each look at each other and allow the other to say, my way is not wrong because I live this way, And your way is not wrong. We can each do it and still have value for each other.
That's right.
Yes? Just to underscore the last one that spoke, that's not necessarily an older versus younger. We came up to Holman Village to live and our kids thought we were crazy.
Yeah. Yes, thank you.
Are they yuppies?
Yeah, you might say that.
Any other questions about the seminary experience from the female perspective? Yes.
I don't know if you're ready for the seminary experience of women from a male perspective.
Sure. Give it to us.
Or seminary experience from a male perspective of women, or I don't know. But one thing that was very, you said that the men would come to you for hugs. I found it difficult being a person who has had women for friends and has felt comfortable hugging women to come to a seminary and feel like I was suddenly chilled by the women around me, and most of them young.
At my age.
Yeah, and there were some of the older women, but for the most part they were married or they were living off campus, and I was living on campus and didn't have much to do with them. I was also tied up in the MA program, which probably needs as much explanation as being a woman.
That's right.
I just, you know, and I think that as maybe it gets easier for the women, that will change. But that was really hard for me to come in contact. And this defensiveness and I can't afford to be soft now, kind of view.
That's very interesting, because one of the observations that I have made at Lutheran Northwestern Seminary is that I have seen more men hugging men than I have seen in a long while, and it was marvelous.
I actually felt easier. I felt I was more at ease after getting accustomed to the place of hugging other men than I was hugging some of the women.
We're all human, we're all different, and in different settings we have different limits and boundaries, and it takes getting used to whatever those might be.
Well,
yes?
It seemed to me that the first women graduates were very militant and very women's lib and feminist, and it seems to me now that they're just ordinary. And maybe the first ones were on the cutting edge and had to be that.
You know, it's interesting. In this study, I didn't mention it, but women still feel on the cutting edge. And if you're within that academic, rigorous situation, the women still seem to feel it's a tough battle to fight. But those women who were first ordained, 10 years ago, whatever.
15.
Maybe it's 15, yeah. They were really pioneers. And when you think of pioneer times, you think of all the things that people had to go through. And those things still are going, people are still going through those things today, just because this is a new phenomenon. And, I, at age 44, coming up here on the boat, somebody said, "Clergy?" I didn't know women could be clergy, and I said, then you start the whole story all over again. It wasn't anybody coming to Holden. They were going on to Stehekin. But, all the time you hear those kinds of things. Well, how can that be? You mean you left a successful career in the business world to do this? Well, yes, I did. How come... you can make money in the other job you had. I said, "That's right." I have nothing now, but that's beside the point. that's not the point of what I'm doing, or the point of what many people are doing.
But so it's just different perspectives and different outlooks. I don't know. Questions? Yes.
Do you have any way of knowing what type of congregations that people would want a woman in the ministry? Is there a certain kind of congregation that would prefer?
I don't know if there is a certain kind of congregation that would prefer a woman. I do know that primarily because men have been clergy longer, most of them are in the larger urban areas. There are some women as associates. But primarily because the women are newer to the clergy ranks, they're associates rather than senior pastors. There are a lot of women in the rural areas, many women in the rural areas. And once a rural area seems to have had a woman, oftentimes they prefer to keep a woman rather than having a man. Now, I don't know why that is, but it's just a new experience. It's not that one is better than the other, because I'm sure we all have our gifts. It's probably just personality, like it is with anybody else. Some people you appreciate more than others, but everybody can do the same. I mean, we can all do the same skills. We can all do marriages and funerals and counseling and Bible studies and confirmation and Sunday school and administrate, you know, the affairs of the congregation. Women just say that they're often still asked to bring food for the potlucks when the men aren't. Yeah.
Just an observation. In Seattle, the first woman pastor for a Lutheran church that came, the women of that congregation were the least accepted of her, rather than the men. The men were very much in favor of her.
Now, of course, it's
very fine. But in the first point, they lost a lot of their older women and single women from the congregation.
Women have a hard time accepting other women as clergy. Yes, Cheryl.
Another observation. My brother is a single Lutheran pastor. And the discrimination for single pastors gets extreme sometimes. Because Martin Luther had a lot of babies and a wife. And most congregations like their pastor to be married. And Bob has been treated like a vicar a lot of times.
Yes.
And no time to yourself because you're single. You can do everything.
That's right.
You don't have a family. And that's the same thing.
And that's why it is so incredibly, and this is getting off the subject, but this is why it's so incredibly important for clergy people, male and female, to say no sometimes, to learn to say no. Because you can be working morning, noon, and evening, morning, noon, and evening, 7 days a week, and fine if you feel like it. But we're all human, and we all need that seventh day of rest. Now, we all know the clergy person doesn't get it on Sunday, because that's a work day. But someplace along the line, clergy need rest too. And they need a break. Just like everybody else in every other career. So, but that's a good point.
There is discrimination.
With the single people, thinking, well, they're single, they have extra time, they don't have.
They can do anything.
Families to be
they
responsible.
Or they don't. Singleness. Some churches would not call a single pastor as readily as a pastor would a family.
Unfortunately.
Unless it's a secondary pastor.
Yes.
That singleness discrimination, though, extends beyond the clergy as a newly single parent. People assume since I was no longer married, I had lots of time, not realizing that I then had full responsibility for our family.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
That's so what it extends past the clergy.
You're right. Mm-hmm. That's so true.
Getting back to the calling the women into the as interns, I come from St. John's in Des Moines, and the girls like to come to our church because when they send for a call out for an intern, they say, we want a woman. And they say that's so unusual when they say we want it, that they often say we will accept one or we will not accept one. But Pastor Schmalberger puts, we want a female.
That's exciting.
Yeah, it is. It's very exciting for us to be.
Some of the comments of women when they realize that many congregations will only take a man, they say, and this is just what I've heard, you know, in little scuttlebutt around the seminary, they say, if a church won't take a woman, then a bishop shouldn't send a man. Yeah. You know, people should be welcome to be inviting whoever is qualified and the best person to take the position. Somewhere.
Oh, I have heard something. Have new ministries been created now that women are ordained?
Have what?
New ministries, new areas of ministry now that women are ordained.
I don't know the answer to that question. I'm sorry.
I was thinking particularly about ministering to women in shelters, ministering to women with fertility problems or who have lost children. Mm-hmm. The kinds of things that perhaps only a woman can do.
Yeah, I don't know the answer.
Sorry.
Well, only women can have children, you're right. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. Any other questions? Time is just about up. Thanks so much for coming.